Aloha and good morning, everyone. Welcome to Our Homes, Ending the Housing Crisis. My name is Stanley Chang, and I chair the Hawaii Senate Committee on Housing. Today's guest is Stan Rinsler, Associate Research Director of the California Housing Partnership. He is responsible for policy and research initiatives which aim to expand the resources for affordable housing, preservation, and development in California, as well as increasing their efficiency and social impact. Prior to joining the partnership, Dan worked at the Low Income Investment Fund, where he managed a variety of strategic initiatives, such as around impact assessment and the intersection of healthcare and housing, and contributed to program development and policy leadership. Today, he'll be presenting on Tahanan, a permanent supportive housing community in San Francisco, which was built in half the time and 30% cheaper than comparable projects. Dan, thank you so much for sharing your insights with us today, and please take it away.
Great. Thank you so much for the invitation and for having me here. It is much appreciated, and I'm looking forward to the conversation. So I'll be controlling the slides here, so feel free to stop me at any point, but I'll just jump right in. So just first, by way of introduction, my organization, the California Housing Partnership, you can see it in our name. We're very focused on California and we're based here. We have a unique history. We were created by the state legislature in 1988, and our board is appointed by the speaker, Senate president, and governor. That said, we are a private independent nonprofit with no ongoing state funding. And our staff helps affordable housing developers across the state create and preserve affordable housing to the tune of more than 85,000 in our history. I'm part of a small but mighty policy and research team focused on improving housing systems across the state with a heavy focus on state policy. So my presentation is going to go pretty heavily into the weeds later on, so I thought it might be helpful to begin with just a couple of slides to highlight what we found in this evaluation. So as Senator Chang already mentioned, Tahanan is a 145-unit permanent supportive housing development in San Francisco, completed at the end of 2021, whose financing, design, and construction were explicitly intended to reduce development costs and timeline. In essence, this presented a rare test case for trying something completely new and different in the world of professional practice that presented an opportunity for evaluation. And what we found is that the project was successful in reducing residential costs and the development timeline by approximately 40% respectively compared to other permanent supportive housing in San Francisco. Among our findings, one highlight is that the finance and development model used for this project allowed it to bypass several city and county of San Francisco review processes and requirements, which enabled the project implementers to prioritize time and cost goals over other policy goals, which is simply not an option available to developers typically. And so the project's success at reducing time and cost raises the question of whether local government requirements and review processes imposed on PSH and other affordable housing, even if well-meaning, should perhaps be reassessed to avoid time and cost escalation in light of the importance of addressing homelessness and housing unaffordability. So a bit of background on the initiative. This is part of a larger chronic homelessness initiative in San Francisco that Tipping Point Community, which is a foundation based in the city, created. The Homes for the Homeless Fund is a component of that larger initiative, and it is a revolving fund used to test new approaches to reducing the time and cost of developing PSH for individuals experiencing chronic homelessness in San Francisco, with an eye towards system change and replicability. And so the Urban Institute was brought in to evaluate the overall CHI initiative, and my organization, the California Housing Partnership, was brought on to evaluate specifically HHF due to our expertise in housing finance and development. And so Tahanan, located at 833 Bryant Street, is the first HHF investment and it had a goal to complete a 100% PSH development in 3 years at a cost of less than $400,000 per unit, which Tipping Point and its partners saw as aspirational but potentially achievable goals at the time. Tipping Point Community enlisted an organization called the Housing Accelerator Fund to create and implement the Homes for the Homeless Fund. And then they selected Mercy Housing to serve as the developer for this particular project. And so Tahannon is a 6-story development containing 145 permanent supportive homes, one manager unit, common spaces, space for supportive services, two ground floor retail spaces. And Tahannon is a Tagalog word meaning home, coming home, or return home. And the property is located in the South of Market neighborhood of San Francisco on Bryant Street between 6th and 7th. So to achieve Tahannon's time and cost goals, the Housing Accelerator Fund created a unique finance and development model that differed really meaningfully from the traditional approach to creating PSH in San Francisco. And some of those key differences are shown here. First, investment of private foundation funds to pay for acquisition, pre-development, construction, only to be repaid with public funding after the project's completion. This approach really contrasts with the traditional PSH financing and development approach, which requires developers to obtain public commitments of permanent funding before acquisition and during the early phases of pre-development. Relatedly, there was a commitment from the City and County of San Francisco to shift its role as a funder and provide a new form of subsidy, which was these annual property lease payments to cover debt service for the long-term tax-exempt bond loan via this long-term contract. And this was in lieu of a traditional upfront capital loan that it typically provides to PSH. And third were new tools, efficiency tools, not unique to Tahannon, but which were still relatively new to the field. One is use of offsite modular construction, and second is utilization of a relatively new state law called SB 35 that allows for streamlined entitlements. So our findings, first focusing on quantitative findings. So Tahannon's total residential development costs were approximately $377,000 per unit, which was almost 6% lower than the $400,000 goal when removing acquisition costs, commercial space costs, and other paper costs that are not real, but are part of the sort of accounting of costs in the state funding system. And these were measures that we took to get as close to an apples to apples comparison as possible between Tahannon and the different groups of comparison projects, which were, as shown here, traditionally financed PSH, as well as developments that used offsite modular construction and those which utilized the SB 35 streamlining law. And we included these in order to test the efficacy of the individual features of the Tahannon model without the entire package of those efficiencies. And so what you can see here in this chart is that, you know, $377,000 per unit was substantially lower than the median cost per unit of approximately $642,000 among the comparison PSH developments. So this is a 41% reduction in cost by comparison. Reductions were pretty similar for the SB 35 and modular comparison groups, suggesting that the Tahannon's full sort of range and package of financial and development efficiencies meaningfully contribute to the depth of cost savings relative to these comparison groups. And the last thing I'll say here is, although this analysis focuses on total development costs, that was our charge, and does not compare Tahannon's public subsidies with those of similar developments, if total development costs were higher, additional public subsidy would have been required, because the maximum additional tax credits, for example, that could theoretically be obtained from higher costs would only cover about 45 cents for every dollar of cost. We reran the cost comparison analysis just to developments that contained, like Tahannon, entirely studios or SROs. And The reduction was still substantial, though slightly smaller. So $190,000 in reduction, or 34% drop compared to these studio only projects. We dug into this a little bit more and found that Tahannan's total development cost per square foot was actually similar to these comparison developments. And, you know, we ultimately in this evaluation assessed on a per unit basis because of its alignment with the goal of ending chronic homelessness. And I'll touch on this later, but project implementers credited smaller units and efficient floor plans and the ability to adhere to that design and build it very quickly to these cost savings rather than differences in cost on a square foot basis as sort of the primary driver of differences in costs. Digging into some of the cost categories, there's a lot to see here, but what this is showing is that most of the difference in total development cost between Tahannan and the different comparison groups originated in the new construction cost category. So that's the structure itself, often referred to as hard costs, rather than soft costs like architectural and attorney fees, even if some savings were realized in those kinds of categories as well. So around 80% of the difference in residential costs between Tahannan and the traditional PSH comparison group were in this new construction category, similar sort of relative reductions to the other comparison groups. Digging even further into this new construction cost category, structure costs made up by far the largest share of the difference in the new construction cost between Tahannan and the traditional PSH group, as well as the others. So the savings are really in just the structure itself. That's what the data is telling us here. In terms of timelines, Tahannan nearly met its goal of a 3-year total timeline from acquisition to temporary certificate of occupancy, exceeding it only by 1 month. Project implementers will note that they would have met the 3-year goal if not for a 1-month delay caused by an unexpected electrical issue along with other pandemic-related delays. Again, it was completed in 2021. In addition, a comparison of total project timelines was not really possible because Tahannan is unique in having purchased a site prior to securing entitlements, compared to the way that affordable housing is typically developed in San Francisco, where it's done on sort of donated land or publicly owned sites that are already entitled. And so our quantitative analysis of timelines focuses only on those components of the timeline for which data are available from most, if not all, of the comparison developments. And so what we found was, as you can see here, that, you know, overall and specifically within each time frame, Tahannan had generally meaningfully shorter timelines than the comparison group projects. And so when you add all of these components together, the sort of period from entitlement approval date to the place in service date at the very end had Tahannan coming in around 41% shorter of a total timeframe compared to the median comparison periods for each of the comparison groups. So the story behind the numbers. Tahannan's implementers approached financing, design, and site selection completely focused on reducing costs and time, an approach that they described as very unusual for PSH and affordable housing development more generally in San Francisco for a variety of reasons that are just typically out of their control. And so the following slides will detail key differences between Tahannan and, you know, your typical developments and how those differences drove time and cost savings. And these were revealed primarily through interviews with project implementers and other affordable housing developers and professionals in San Francisco. So first, the very commitment to timeline and cost goals influenced how project implementers conceived of and approached Tahannan at several key decision points. First, And bigger picture, and at the beginning of the project, just designing the financing and development model itself. They intended for each feature of the model to contribute to time and cost savings. And in doing so, after playing around with different approaches, they ultimately pursued a core concept of using private funds to facilitate an evolution in the city and county's role as a project funder and reviewer, while also incorporating these other efficiency strategies of SB 35 streamlining and offsite modular construction. Second, in selection of the project team, implementers reported that the team members, so the developer, architect, general contractor, offsite modular construction manufacturer, were selected in large part because of their commitment to meeting time and cost, timeline and cost goals, among other factors. And finally, critically, timeline and cost goals really influence the building and unit design in multiple respects. So first, in the residential space, project implementers designed the affordable units in the building to be smaller than typical PSH units to maximize efficiency while seeking to maintain livability. So units are identical and approximately 260 square feet, more than one third smaller than the typical affordable unit in the comparison PSH developments that we looked at, which have a median square footage of nearly 400 square feet. Each floor plan is identical and efficiently designed, minimizing the need for excess circulation space. So this efficient unit and floor plan design and avoiding construction cost escalation because of the shorter timeline appear to be primarily responsible for the substantially lower costs that I described earlier. The project implementers believe that had, Tahannan been subject to San Francisco's typical review processes during pre-development, they would have been pushed or encouraged to increase unit sizes, which is a perspective that appears reasonable considering that PSH unit sizes in San Francisco typically are much larger. Second, commercial space. Project implementers reported that the amount of space in Tahannan, which includes two small retail spaces intended to benefit the streetscape and the community, was likely smaller than would have been required or encouraged had the project not been able to avoid the standard local discretionary review processes in San Francisco. And then finally, project implementers reported that timeline and cost goals allowed managers of the project to push back against design bells and whistles internally, and then externally, utilization of private funds and SB 35 streamlining allowed the project to avoid various local processes that could have led to costly design changes and delays. So $50 million in HHF funds were made available to advance the project from the beginning of the development process and were used to conduct the relatively risky activities of purchasing the site and paying for pre-development construction. And this approach enabled local and state sources to be added later in the project timeline, making the acquisition and construction process resemble a turnkey financing model in which the public agency pays for just a mostly completed project without the ability to second guess design and construction choices. And so HHF's higher risk tolerance enabled the project to advance on a faster timeline without waiting for city and state competitive funding, in some cases running multiple components simultaneously, which substantially reduced construction interest costs. Second, the Housing Accelerator Fund used these private HHF funds to essentially act as the construction lender to Mercy Housing for the project, charging a below market interest rate sufficient only to cover internal administrative costs. And then finally, just use of these private funds are what shifted and facilitated the shift in the role of San Francisco from a provider of capital subsidy to basically a takeout funder via a new lease contract structure. enabling Tehanan to avoid regulations and processes typically required in San Francisco of PSH. And so to be clear, the city and county of San Francisco was a key partner in advancing this model and trying it out by developing this new long-term financeable lease contract to cover debt service. It again shifted its role, as a public funder from the traditional upfront capital subsidy to one of essentially pre-contracting for a finished product. And in doing so, the project was able to avoid several regulatory requirements imposed typically as a condition of accepting city and county funding. And some of these requirements are listed here. So this is local business enterprise contracting, processes that drive developers crazy, including asynchronous plan review by the Department of Building Inspection and the Mayor's Office on Disability. A litany of public art requirements that have shifted over time, but at the time would have required participation by the San Francisco Art Commission in the selection of the architect and during design review, as well as the requirement that a public art project of a cost equal to 1% of the capital contribution from the city be included in the project. Also requirements to use Public Utility Commission power, which necessitates drafting and executing an agreement with PG&E, and prevailing wage monitoring by a local agency. And so, it's important to say that these requirements represent a range of worthy and in some cases deeply equity-focused policy goals. But as applied to PSH in San Francisco and affordable housing in San Francisco, they appear to contribute to more expensive design changes and delays. Second, listed on this slide, the project was also able to access lower borrowing rates for tax-exempt bonds due to the strong credit rating behind the San Francisco's lease payments. In addition, San Francisco did not act as the bond issuer. The CalHFA Housing Finance Agency played this role, which project implementers estimated reduced the timeline by several weeks and thus reduced construction cost escalation during this period. Since PSH was, according to the zoning code, ultimately an eligible site on 833 Bryant, Tehanan was able to invoke the relatively new state law, SB 35, which streamlines the entitlement process for eligible developments and influence timeline and cost in a few ways, including, first, because of the requirements of SB 35, Tehanan was fully entitled in 4 months, which is compared to, a more typical 2 years, and thereby avoiding substantial construction cost escalation during that period. Second, they were able, the implementers were able to adhere to efficient design by avoiding discretionary review processes typically required as part of the entitlement process. And then finally, they were able to lock in this efficient design early in the development or pre-development process, allowing modular offsite construction to begin with certainty that cost increases and changes typically associated with the longer San Francisco entitlement processes would not materialize. And finally, modular offsite construction, contracting with Factory OS, which is a San Francisco Carpenter Union Local 22 staffed factory in Vallejo, California, across the bay from San Francisco, to build modules offsite enabled Tehanan to achieve timeline and cost savings through an early start to manufacturing. So specifically, HHF funds were used to begin offsite production concurrently with site work in 4 months before waiting for public funds in the form of tax-exempt bonds, which is the typical approach to materialize, thereby accelerating the project timeline and avoiding, again, construction cost inflation during this period of significant inflation in terms of costs. So what does this all mean? Tehanan's implementers achieved the goal of completing this PSH project for less than $400,000 a unit and nearly achieved the goal of completing it in less than 3 years, demonstrating that it is possible to substantially reduce time and cost for developing PSH in San Francisco. And so the success of this model could have real implications for not just individual projects, but for the system of financing and developing PSH and affordable housing more generally in San Francisco and potentially beyond. So as I've covered already ad nauseum, much of Tehanan's time and cost savings resulted from project implementers having the freedom to prioritize time and cost goals over other policy goals, like hiring small local firms, adding to the city's public art, thanks to SB 35 streamlining and use of private funds during pre-development and construction, which essentially limited San Francisco, the city and county's input on the project during that period. And so that finding just raises the question of whether, you know, considering the severity of the homelessness and housing affordability crises, government requirements and review processes that are imposed on PSH and other affordable housing as a condition of accepting funding, but not on projects that do not receive local funding, even if well-meaning, perhaps should be reassessed, eliminated, bypassed, or minimized in order to avoid impacts on timeline and costs. So for example, could government, instead of a private foundation, be the ones to establish time and cost savings as overriding policy goals in the creation of PSH? Could it act as a takeout funder in the way it did for Tehanan, so long as time and cost goals are met, you know, rather than imposing costly processes and requirements upfront as a condition of receiving funding? So this kind of shift in role for government and local government in this case would be hard. It would require taking politically challenging steps of giving up some control to prioritize addressing housing affordability and homelessness. And each requirement has a political constituency, and it's very hard to take things away. So, you know, that said, however, you know, this approach could enable government to fundamentally change how PSH and other affordable housing gets built, thereby ensuring more efficient use of scarce public dollars available to support developments and addressing growing public concern, at least in California, over the cost and time to develop affordable housing in PSH. Project implementers also see several aspects of the Tehanan financing and development model as potentially replicable and or having helped advance approaches for reducing time and cost, including those listed here. And it should be noted that some aspects of the Tehanan model are now being replicated at a new site in San Francisco's Mission District neighborhood with much of the same project team. An evaluation like this will always raise additional questions. And we identified a couple here where we felt that future research could increase understanding and acceptance of how to achieve timeline and cost savings for PSH and other affordable housing in San Francisco and potentially other places. So first, considering both the substantial cost savings associated with the smaller units in Tehanan, as well as questions from some observers about the livability of those units. We felt that an examination of post-occupancy experiences of Tehanan's residents and service providers could be useful for assessing whether any livability, property management, or service provision issues actually emerged that were associated with those smaller spaces. Second, you know, as I've covered, being exempt from many of the regulations and processes typically imposed in San Francisco played a critical role in generating Tehanan's timeline and cost savings. And so a comparison of San Francisco's development environment, which is unique, with other types of jurisdictions in the region and state and beyond, for example, suburbs that might have different or fewer discretionary hurdles, but other cost drivers, could help increase understanding of just the incremental effects of different types of regulations and processes and on development costs and timelines. Overall, though, the development of this project, Tehanan, demonstrates in a rare test case that it is possible to develop PSH faster and at lower cost, making more efficient use of public funds and making more of this kind of housing available. But it really, you know, what we found is that it really comes down to prioritizing these outcomes over other policy goals. And this is a consideration and a lesson that could be applied to individual projects, but also to broader systems of financing and developing permanent supportive housing and other types of affordable housing. And that is the end of my presentation. So I think I will hand it back over to Senator Chang.
Thank you so much, Dan, for a thorough and very informative presentation. To our audience, feel free to submit your questions via the Q&A function of this Zoom webinar. I'll get things started. So you talked about how the city's willingness to bypass a lot of the typical regulatory requirements, like, you know, hiring small local businesses, was a key component of getting the costs down and the timeline short. How did you get the city to be willing to do that in the first place?
Good question. So to be clear, I was not part of the project team myself. I was part of the evaluation team. And so I was not privy to all of those negotiations. The general impression I came away with is that staff at the Housing Funding Agency in San Francisco were very intrigued by this process, by this project and what it was trying to do, and were very interested in what would result. That was from the agency that provides capital funding typically. It was actually a different agency that was part of the negotiation around what the new lease contract would look like. But I would say generally this project was looked upon with great interest among those inside of government as well as outside of it. And there was a willingness and an interest to try something because, frankly, costs and timeline in San Francisco have gotten to the point of feeling out of control in the context of a worsening housing affordability and homelessness crisis. And so there's a desire to make some kind of a difference. And this was an opportunity to at least test.
So then to expand this model, can the city simply continue to waive these restrictions on a case-by-case basis? Or would that require, you know, legislation from the city council? Or what would it take to expand that model?
Yeah, so that's a good question. To be clear, the reason that the project was not subject to a lot of the requirements typically imposed on PSH and other affordable housing is because it did not is because of the type of subsidy that it received from the city and the county. Instead of a capital subsidy that helped pay for the building itself, it got a lease contract that sort of comes in after the building is already complete. And because of the particularities in San Francisco's regulations, you're not subject to the same things if the funding comes in that separate form. That said, so this model could be replicable as is, where they don't need requirements to be waived if they receive public subsidy in the form that they got it for Tehanan. That said, the San Francisco could waive or modify some of the requirements that it currently imposes as a provision of receiving capital subsidy up front, which is the typical approach that PSH takes in San Francisco. And so that would require, I believe, legislative changes through the Board of Supervisors.
Do you think that the board is interested in doing so? Has there been legislative momentum in San Francisco or other jurisdictions in California to do so?
Not that I'm aware of. I'm not sure. The one component that is active at the state level currently is an extension and modification to the SB 35 streamlining law that sunsets in the next year or two. And so there's an effort to extend that sunset and make it permanent or close to permanent. And that bill is, I believe, SB 423, advanced by Senator Scott Wiener.
Great. We have a question from the audience. So who is the owner of the building? It's also a very large project, 145 units for this particular segment of the population. And you can imagine that there would be NIMBYism, not in my backyard, a lot of opposition from the community. How is that addressed?
So the ownership of this building is with, I believe, Mercy Housing or the entity that Mercy Housing is a part of. So that's more of a traditional ownership. There is a unique structure in which the property lease payments from the city and county are coming to the project, in which the project is leasing the building to the county, and the county is then leasing it back, and that's sort of the vehicle for those payments. So there's a bit of an odd sort of ownership and then multiple layers of leasing happening. So I don't think that particular structure is being used in the new sort of Tahannan 2.0 in the Mission District. It's going to be a little bit more straightforward, as I understand it, or at least according to current plans. In terms of the community, again, I wasn't part of that process, but there is a lot of affordable housing and permanent supportive housing in San Francisco and in these core neighborhoods in the eastern and part of the city. And so, I wouldn't say that this particular project stands out in that regard. They did work with some community groups on some of the programming of the building in order to gain community acceptance. And I think that that is sort of a typical thing that developers will do in the context of, in this case, a generally lower income community of color and a strong Filipino community in this case, in the South of Market neighborhood in San Francisco.
You mentioned during your presentation that it'd be worthwhile to study the post-occupancy success of the project. Do you have a sense of how the project is being used now that it's in operation and occupied?
It's a good question. I have not followed the post-occupancy story of Tahannan closely, so I can't really respond to that at this point. This has been, I think, generally a very tough period in terms of rising homelessness and street homelessness in San Francisco. And so, it's possible that some of the challenges that the city's experiencing as a whole have made their way into Tahannan specifically, but I don't know if that would be necessarily unique to Tahannan. And so I think that that's time will tell, and others can probably speak more to that question than I can at this point.
More generally, what surprised you the most as you were conducting this research and learning about this unique process?
That's a good question. I think it's a rare thing for a test case like this to emerge in professional practice. And so those who pursued this model at the Housing Accelerator Fund and Mercy Housing and Tipping Point and all members of the project team really deserve a lot of commendation and respect for just trying something new in San Francisco, which is a very tough development environment, and really providing an opportunity to see what is possible. And so just the very fact that this even happened is kind of amazing to me. And it's really rare that in professional practice, in trying to develop housing differently, that you get this kind of a test case. So I'm just grateful and surprised that it happened in the first place, and impressed with the fact that they were able to achieve just the depth of time and cost savings that, you know, if one were to look at it, just feel insurmountable and quite aspirational. So it's heartening to see something like this happen so that we can really have a better sense of what is possible and what might be needing to change in order to get there systematically.
All right, and maybe we'll just go with one last question. So the limiting factor for the replicability of this model, you know, and building more Tehanans is essentially the availability of the government funding, right? Because if there were more government funding, more Tehanans could be built. And if there wasn't, then this would be it.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Availability of funding is totally necessary for serving a population of people exiting chronic homelessness or with otherwise extremely low incomes. That said, scaling Tehanan's successes at reducing time and cost really require a reimagining of the role of the public sector in, you know, potentially acting as San Francisco did in this case, sort of paying for a finished product rather than sort of dictating the terms of engagement from the beginning.
Okay, and actually we do have one more question from the audience. A series of very specific questions. Was there anything in the unit design that specifically addressed this specific population of tenants? And were there any parking requirements? Were the tax-exempt bonds a competitive process? And how were the services being funded?
Good questions. I'm trying to look at it myself to remember what they all are. So anything in the unit design that specifically addresses tenancy, I mean, they were disability accessible, some if not all. I believe it's a very high acuity population that is being placed in the building and through the coordinated entry system in San Francisco, which, as I understand it, is facing some challenges currently. And so I believe it was designed specifically for that population. Again, it will be interesting, you know, given concerns that some raised about whether just the very unit size presented any challenges, but we don't know that at this point. I believe there are no parking. There's no parking included in the project. So that might be something a little bit more unique to San Francisco, although it's not the only project that has no parking. Tax-exempt bonds, were they competitive at the time? They have become competitive in California over the last few years, and I cannot remember if Tehanan came in just before they got to be increasingly competitive. It's possible that they did. It's a good question. I wish I had a clear answer for that. Services are funded through a separate contract provided by the city and county of San Francisco. And that's just the typical thing that it does with PSH. Any other
questions? Well, yeah, thank you so much for being so willing to delve into the details and to share the outcomes of your study of this unique project. Hopefully here in Hawaii, we can absorb some of these lessons and help make our own permanent supportive housing, but also, you know, affordable and housing generally, you know, cheaper and faster. It's a huge crisis that affects both our states. So thank you for being a part of the solution, Dan.
Well, thank you for the invitation. It's not often that we get invited to speak to a Hawaiian audience. So thank you very much and appreciated the questions.
All right. We'll see everyone again on the next episode of Our Homes Ending the Housing Crisis.